Prepare to be astonished.
It's that time again.
Let's get started.
From the Clatsop County Historical Society, an adventure in history with Matt Burns and Alana Quila.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
And now, with today's adventure, it's Mac and Alana.
Good evening and welcome to an adventure in history. I'm Alana Quila with Providence Seaside Hospital here this evening with Mac Burns, Executive Director of the Clatsop County Historical Society. And tonight we have a very intriguing guest.
Intriguing?
Intriguing. A special?
Special. I don't know. I don't know what adjective I'd use for you.
Competence. I don't think intriguing or special.
Or special.
Competence, optimistic.
Local.
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 Calming.
Okay.
Level-headed.
Okay. I'll take those.
Because I'm watching from afar. Although I have seen you at the Historical Society casino nights, so maybe I should withdraw some of those.
I have enjoyed my time at those fundraisers.
And are we allowed to have him because of your allegiances?
We are, yes. Okay. So there's your sneak peek, folks. If you haven't guessed who it is yet, do you think you can? Because we do have Eric Thorson here with us this evening from CMH. Columbia Memorial Hospital.
I'll say Columbia Memorial Hospital.
Hospital, yes, exactly.
That way you don't have to
Director. Yes, thanks for being here.
Although you two get along. Your organizations. You cooperate and you work in tandem.
Yes.
Our two organizations get along.
Yeah. Common goal.
As they should. Exactly.
Yep. Community health.
It's kind of like when people say the Maritime Museum and us.
Right.
And I'm like, it's apples and oranges. We have the same goal. We want to educate and entertain and welcome visitors and make our hometowns proud.
Yes.
Our pandemic has brought us even closer together.
Yes.
Although 6 feet separate, right?
6 feet separate. With masks on.
With masks on. All right. Well, so this is going to be a full show. We should get right to it. But we do have a couple of commercials.
We do.
So because we're being Santa safe, we have canceled, out of an abundance of caution, tea and plum pudding.
Yep.
Second year in a row. And worse than that, Santa in the House.
Yes.
Or as I say, the Sith.
But Santa still is available.
He is in a roundabout way.
Yes. So we still let kids write a letter to him. They just have to deliver it to the doorsteps of the Flavel House. Today was the last day.
Today. We probably won't check the mailbox and forward that stuff to Santa until tomorrow morning.
So, good to know.
Get over there early in the morning, maybe you can still write a letter to Santa.
My girls mailed theirs.
I saw that.
Yeah.
Because we put them in a big box to save on postage and mail them to the North Pole.
Wonderful. And the best thing is Santa does write back.
He does.
But be sure to pick those up. Between
December 21st and the 23rd at the Carriage House.
Next few days.
Visitor Center.
Personal letter.
Between 10 and 4 and get your response from Santa. Some treats and goodies. And who is it sponsored by?
Providence Seaside Hospital and then LJ and Kent Eason.
Yeah, our friends. So stay Santa safe and right as soon as the show's over, get your kids, wake your kids back up and write a letter to Santa and bring it over to the Flavel House.
Right.
And then from the opposite end, we have a temporary exhibit at the Heritage Museum called Blocked Out, Race and Place in the Making of Modern Astoria.
Yes.
So come and check it out.
Good.
It's a powerful exhibit. But shall we get right to the big
Let's
history highlights?
Yes.
So these are things tomorrow, maybe while you're waiting for your blood work at Columbia Memorial and you're chatting with the people in the chairs next to you, you can make small talk and appear to be really smart with this is the anniversary of certain things.
Yeah, and that was kind of a busy one.
So let's see. These are things that happened on December 20th, 1606.
Ooh.
The English colonial expedition to America consisting of the ships Discovery, Godspeed, and Susan Constant.
Hmm.
Who is Susan Constant? Departs Blackwall, London to found Jamestown, Virginia.
Wow, 1606.
Yeah, 1606. And I always just wonder, Native Americans, why don't you just wipe them all out right when they're getting off the ship? You had them outnumbered.
I know.
But anyway, 1669, the first jury trial in Delaware. Marcus Jacobson is condemned for insurrection and sentenced to flogging, branding, and slavery.
Jeez.
Because one of those isn't enough.
Right. Awful.
What a jury. Jeez.
Mac always finds the most uplifting. Yeah.
1812, Grimm's Fairy Tales, or Children's and Household Tales by Jacob Grimm and Wilhelm Grimm is first published. See, that's not uplifting either.
I know,
if you've read the originals.
Yes. No.
1836. Wow, I skipped one. 1820, Missouri imposes a $1 bachelor tax on unmarried men between 21 and 50.
Because we all know they cost more.
You think that's why?
Yes, I do.
It's because they want families.
Yes.
They want families to be there.
They don't want them drinking. They don't want them out late, the causing trouble.
1836, Andrew Jackson submits his Indian Treaty to Congress. It's a treaty negotiated with the Iowa, Sac, Sioux, Fox, Otoe, and Omaha tribes in the Missouri Territory. Jackson, not very good with the Native Americans.
No.
Let's see. We got to get something good here. 1880, New York's Broadway lit by electricity becomes known as the Great White Way. And have either of you seen a play on Broadway?
I have not.
I have not.
Oh, my goodness.
All no. Right.
I've seen Evita way back in the 80s.
There we go.
Not with Madonna.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see. 1918, the Allies turned their attention to Bolshevik expansion in the East, landing troops in Crimea and Latvia. Because we forget, we actually kind of fought in the Russian Civil War. We had troops in Russia. Well, we tend to forget that. 1946, It's a Wonderful Life premieres.
Well, that's a good one.
1957, Elvis is drafted. 1989, the U.S. invades Panama, but the thing I think had the most impact on history, 1922, 14 republics form the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, the USSR.
Oh.
Certainly it impacts
it did,
like
yeah.
the next 100 years.
Yeah, that's true.
So 1922.
That's good. I'm good. That was a,
you, did I hit everything?
Good, you did.
Wow.
I know. I had a couple in there, but you got them.
I think because we have blinding spotlights on you.
I know.
You just can't read anything that you wrote down.
I do.
But we have our friend, first-time guest.
Yes.
First-time guest.
Eric.
Long-time listener.
Long-time listener, first time. There's no bell to ring. Sorry. And you got to come back four more times to get the T-shirt.
To get the T-shirt. Okay. That we only talk about.
That we only talk. Someday I'll make T-shirts for the Five-Timers Club.
Maybe Columbia Memorial could sponsor the T-shirts.
Maybe they could. Oh, but he'll want to come back four more times.
Yeah, to get his own T-shirt.
So, Eric, you are a hometown boy.
Hometown boy.
So, tell us about you grew up here, and what was that like?
Well, that was in the 80s, a little bit before. My folks moved up here in 1972, and they honeymooned up here. They went through the bumblebee tuna plant, or the packing plant, and fell in love with Astoria, moved the family up here.
Wow.
And I started kindergarten here, finished high school here, went away to college, came back here.
Okay, but you're skipping way too fast.
No, so kindergarten, yeah. Because we're not talking about Astoria.
Warrenton.
Yeah, Warrenton.
Warrenton.
You're a Warrentonian.
1987 graduate from Warrenton High School.
Okay.
So K through 12 at the Warrenton School District.
Back up just a second, though. Your parents just fell in love with the place.
Parents fell in
what
love with
Astoria.
What did
they do? How come they moved here? I mean, what did they do that they could move here?
My dad was in law enforcement at the time, and he moved up here for a new position. My mom was involved with mental health and worked for the county mental health agency for a number of years. And, you know, they just moved from a place that they, I guess, were having a harder time with to a little bit more relaxed environment, you know, on the Oregon coast, and thought that it would be better for their kids. My got three, two brothers and a daughter or a sister. I have a daughter now too. So I think they just felt like it'd be a better place to raise their family up here.
But they came from California?
They came from California, Hayward County.
So pretty big, although you started kindergarten here. So what about your other brothers too and your sister? I mean, because that's from pretty big to, I mean, because Warrenton at the time, weren't you all at one school?
We were all at one school
K through
at
12.
One time. I'm separated. My older brother's 3 years ahead of me. My younger brother's 3 years behind me. My sister is a little bit further behind. But there was a time when, in high school, my brother was a senior. I was a freshman. And those are not, I wouldn't advise that, you know.
My condolences.
Yeah. And then when I was a senior, my younger brother was an eighth grader. So we missed that. You know, kind of awkward freshman senior kind of moment together. But yeah, I started kindergarten here. My older brother started kindergarten in California and transferred up here. There's a, you know, my last name, my mom remarried. She enrolled me in school up here under her married name, never officially adopted, never officially changed my name, but went through the entire school system known as Eric McGuire.
Ooh. You have an alias.
I have an alias. And
now we know.
Yeah, and it was never done legally. So it was actually after college when I went to get a passport.
Oh, no.
Didn't have a birth certificate, had no paperwork to prove who I was.
Oh,
and they
goodness.
Said, well, your last name's Thorson. I'm like, yeah, I'm really a Thorson.
Ugh. Wow.
So
changed. That's hard to track down, too.
Yeah. Yeah. So for those who do know me on the show, yes, in high school and grade school, they would remember me as Eric McGuire, not Eric Thorson.
All right. So what were some of your favorite classes and maybe some teachers or memories? What did you like about school? What didn't you like about Warrenton?
Well, I really liked Warrenton. I went through a time period there where they were building the what I call the new school in Warrenton, where, you know, fifth grade through probably sixth or seventh, we actually came to Central School in Astoria and bused from Warrenton to Astoria because they were building the new school in Warrenton. So I think my first year there was in junior high, seventh grade, I believe, was my first year in the new Warrenton school. But my favorite teachers in school, they go way back, and I still see her. Judy Bigby, my most favorite teachers, most favorite people that there is. And that was probably first and second grade. And just have great memories of that period with the group of people that I, you know, went all the way from kindergarten through high school with. But Judy Bigby was a big influence, I know, in my schooling. And then you get into junior high, and I remember a teacher named Bob Barracks, who was an English teacher. And he was kind of the cool dude. You know, he didn't really act like a traditional teacher, and he organized trips for the seventh and eighth grade class to go on. So he took classes to Ashland, Oregon, through the Shakespearean Festival. And I mean, that was a trip that, you know, you heard about as you were coming up through, you know, elementary school into junior high, and you really wanted to go, and you went with Bob Barracks, and you went rafting, you went roller skating, you did all these things on this trip, and you took in a few Shakespearean plays as well. So he was probably the first time that I remember having a teacher who didn't really feel like a teacher, just felt like kind of that cool guy that you wanted to kind of hang out with. Mm-hmm. And that was in junior high, seventh, eighth grade. Into high school, honestly, I don't know that I would say that I had a favorite. You know, a lot of great people, a lot of great teachers through the system there. But it was, I think, that junior high period that probably had the most impact on me.
That's good.
So your dad's in law enforcement and your mom's in health, mental health.
Mental health.
So what career path do you take and why and where do you go?
Yeah, my career path started actually in healthcare. I, of all things, I wanted to be a physical therapist. I thought that was going to be my, occupation of choice. I did some shadowing here at Columbia Memorial Hospital back then, talked to some of the therapists. I remember my mom had acquaintances there that were able to, you know, tell me a little bit about the career. And I went to a school in Tacoma, Washington that had a physical therapy program, the University of Puget Sound. And it was great, except the classes were terrible.
Oh.
And I did terrible. Oh. I did terrible. Chemistry, you know, all of those science classes just really did not mesh well with me. So that first year was kind of a blur a little bit of what am I supposed to be doing here, because this is not going to work out. Second year back, I took a variety of classes just to try to figure something out. And business, accounting in particular, came very, very easy for me. All of a sudden, those classes I was struggling with, you didn't struggle anymore. It was like, this is what you're supposed to be doing. So finished with a Bachelor of Arts in Accounting from the University of Puget Sound.
And had you liked numbers before that, or was that kind of a discovery for you that you like statistics, you like adding and subtracting, you like balance sheets that are equal and debits equal credits?
Yeah, I liked math. And I, when I reflect back on that, I was always very good in math, good in algebra, good in just understanding the concepts around math, and interested in business, interested in money, interested in those things. And I think that that helped kind of build that interest in accounting. And accounting was just, I mean, it was just fun. It was a great opportunity to kind of stumble in, and then it was great.
So from there, so tell us on your career path, because you didn't land here until a decade ago or so.
Yeah, it's, I didn't pursue healthcare straight out of college. I knew that I didn't want to be an auditor when I you know, took my CPA exam and all that. Public accounting wasn't something that interested me. I wanted to be in industry. And it really was just the job that presented itself. I took a job. My first job out of school was in a paper box manufacturing company as a cost accountant. And I was there maybe 3 or 4 months, and then another job in a basically like a clinic like the Yakima Family Farm Workers Clinic, an FQHC, a low income clinic in Pierce County. So it was right downtown Tacoma in the days where downtown Tacoma was really rough. I remember a couple mornings coming, and there were actually bullet holes through the windows of our offices in downtown Tacoma. So I started in healthcare in this system of low-income clinics as a accountant, and worked under a finance director there. And, you know, I believe strongly you get your break, and it's what you make with that break when it presents itself. And I very early on created a good relationship with the executive director of that organization. And the finance director left to pursue other opportunities, and the executive director of the organization came to me, all of probably 21 years old at the time, and said, "Hey, you know, I like you. You seem like you have potential. You know, if you can show that you can do this job over the next 6 months, we'll give it to you permanently." Wow. It's like, hey,
now,
all right.
Now, when you're doing something like that, I'm always struck by, when you say low income, there's obviously a mission involved, and it's probably not higher paying than industry. So did you, as a bookkeeper, as an accountant, and then moving up to the head of finance, did you get any contact with that mission, or was it strictly you're looking at balance sheets?
Oh, no, you were presented with the, I think, the opportunities of the mission and the challenges of the mission on a daily basis. I mean, it was a relatively small organization, and you knew what everyone was doing. I mean, you were there to serve a population of people that just were unable to access basically the healthcare system. So I think that was, you know, the kind of the fabric of that organization, or the bedrock of that organization, was protecting the mission, working towards the mission, and they did a good job. Anyone in there understood why you were there and what you were doing.
Yeah, I mean, when you talk about community health, that is like the baseline right there. Especially that's prior to Medicaid funding. It was just coming about, and so.
Yeah, it was a tough organization to run. I mean, it was on a shoestring of a budget, trying to expand, trying to meet a demand. I mean, I remember clinics when they opened at, you know, whatever time of the morning it was, 8, 9 o'clock. I mean, lines of people out the door waiting to get in. I mean, the demand certainly outstripped the supply, but yet no funding, grant-funded organization that had to make it with whatever means they had at the time.
So healthcare's changed a little bit, and you've been part of that change. What has it been like, you moving up, and also healthcare really evolving to better meet those needs too of that population?
Yeah, it's gone a lot harder.
Has it?
It's gone a lot harder, especially the last 2 years. Holy smokes! It's been interesting to watch the dynamics, I think, of the system change. It's interesting now. I can reflect after, I guess, you know, 25 or so years in the business, thinking back to kind of the way it used to be. And, you know, you see generational changes in the workforce, the work-life balance, you know, long gone are the days of the doctor who, you know, puts their entire life on, you know, kind of aside while they tend to their patients at home, or 24/7 when, you know, everybody was willing to take call. And I mean, all of those dynamics of it was like your calling and you were there and you put everything else aside. It seems like, you know, that's a big difference these days, that the balance of work and life and kids, it's harder to raise kids. It's harder to be a one income family. So, you know, you got spouses that both work that make it harder, I think, for those providers to set everything aside. I don't think they want to set everything aside as much as, you know, the previous generations did. So, I mean, I see generational changes.
Do you think that knowledge or understanding or desire to have that work-life balance is an improvement, or does it, have we lost something? Because we interviewed Vern Fowler, whose dad was Dr. Fowler, and the Astoria Clinic, I guess is the name of it. And he talked about at his dad's night that the phones got switched over to their house, and he would answer the call and, "Dad, you got to go. So-and-so is about to give birth." And he kind of thought that was just part of being a doctor.
Yeah, I think that's right. Do I think it's better? I don't know if it's better or worse. I think it's different. And, you know, the system, I think, has to catch up to, you know, is it better or not? It certainly takes more resources, you know, than it used to provide kind of the same, you know, care to the community. I don't know. This is certainly not a scientific study, but in some conversations with OHSU, they have mentioned that they've done some studies that show that, you know, a retiring physician now, it takes 1.67 FTEs to replace the one retiring physician. So, you know, it does seem like it takes more people to do the same work that we were able to do, but the complexity's risen, the payment structure's changed. It is just, I think, all around harder to, you know, operate a healthcare institution these days.
And then you put us in rural Oregon. Yes. And there's a little hiccup too, because both of our institutions are in rural clinics, and it's challenging to keep some of those providers that may not love living here like we do, and they may not enjoy the wet winter days or the wet summer days.
That's why you both only do recruiting in the summertime.
That's right.
So what made you come back here? Speaking of that, because you could have gone to a big metropolitan area, probably.
Seattle.
So why'd you come back to Astoria, Warrenton?
Well, I was never one of those kids that really wanted to, you know, say, I don't ever want to come back to my hometown. I want out. You know, I don't like it here. I really always did enjoy being here and living here. A job brought me back. I mean, I started my first hospital across the river in Ilwaco as the CFO over there, and that was my first opportunity as a, you know, chief executive officer or chief financial officer at a hospital. Mm-hmm. And that came about again in kind of just a fluke. My older brother's an optometrist. He owns a few eye clinics around you know, Clatsop in Pacific County, and he heard through Rotary that the hospital is having a hard time filling their CFO position, and said, "Hey, you know what? You might want to think about, you know, contacting him." And I did. Just married at the time, and kind of wanted to do something a little different. And you know, it's one of those only walk through the hallways of the hospital, and the CEO goes, "Well, you seem like a good enough guy." When do you want to start? I mean, I didn't even leave the campus, and the job was offered. So just kind of one of those things that brought me back. The career brought me back. And then, you know, never really probably thought I'd stay my entire career here, but it's just been such a great place to grow and raise your own family, be a part of a small community, feel like you can make a difference. I mean, that's what... You know, it's hard. Like I said, it's hard to run a hospital. But the thing that I tell people that I enjoy the most is being able to make a difference. And then in a small community like this, being able to see the impact that your decisions or your team can really have for the betterment of the community. And I've had an opportunity over the past, you know, 10, 15 years to, you know, be a part of a growing organization and really make some, I think, dramatic changes to the overall health and access to health in this community. And that's what's kept me here.
So we talked about this a little bit before we went on the air, but you've been now in charge for 11 years, 12 years?
2010.
And you replaced Terry Finkline, who had been here for...
22 years.
So that's between the two of you. That's an incredible run. Yeah. Stability. What, though, besides stability, has allowed Columbia Memorial to grow the way that it has?
Well, I think it's the vision that the board, and again, you talk about stability both in the CEO job, but also on the board. I mean, we've had board members who have been part of the CMH board for over 30 years. So there's stability at the board. There's a vision to grow. There was, you know, was and is a vision to grow. We've wanted to always provide as much access to care locally that we could. And, you know, I think that the board being willing to take a few risks with me, you know, the OHSU partnership was a risk in the beginning. We didn't have a partner. It was kind of built on one program, started a, you know, a trusting relationship, and then it just kind of, like a snowball, just kind of caught on, started rolling, got a little bigger, and the next thing you know, we have a, you know, wonderful cancer program in our community that didn't exist before. So I do think it's been the willingness of the board to take some risks, allow me some flexibility to, you know, try some things that we all think, you know, would work and be successful in our community, invest in those programs. And, you know, I think we've had great success improving the access to care in this community.
And what are some of your proudest, just one or two successes, either monumental that we all see in the community or maybe small things that we're not even aware of, that you'd say, hey, this is one of the best things I ever did?
Yeah, I think physically the thing you can point to is the cancer center. That's obviously a tremendous accomplishment. But, you know, I mean, I enjoy the growth and the impact that we've had around economic development with job growth. I mean, I'm unaware of any other organization in Clatsop County that I think in about the 10 years that I've been there, you know, 300 plus jobs created. And, you know, from physician job to housekeeping job. So I think, you know, seeing the impact that those jobs have on, you know, both the community here, you know, they're bringing people to this community, giving back inside the community with, you know, their families. And that job growth has been an incredible accomplishment.
And you're still, are you the second largest employer to the, is it the county that's number one? Or is it WANA?
It's probably WANA.
WANA then?
I'm not even 100% sure about that. Okay. I'm not sure of the count at WANA. But we right now are up to, I believe, about 725 individuals.
So you could be the top.
Yeah.
Okay.
We could be. If we're not, we're close.
Yes. Yeah. No.
So in just about a minute that we have left, talk about COVID and how it's affected your staff.
Well, I've got a great staff. Was just recognizing some of the staff this past week for the efforts that they played during this Delta surge. It is probably the hardest time, I think, for anyone that's in healthcare to be in this industry. Hard for administrators, but certainly the harder part is on the physicians and the nurses, the CNAs, you know, anyone on the care team that is donning and doffing with almost every patient is just stressed right now. The staffing situations, we're struggling with staff, and, you know, people are doing more with less right now. So my kudos, my hat's off to our team. They're a fantastic team at CMH.
Yes. Well, from my limited experience, they're always smiling and they're always professional every time I've gone in there.
And we've appreciated the partnership, of course. Yeah.
All right. Great. Go make some history. Thanks for being here. We'll catch you next week.
Merry Christmas.
Thank you for joining us for An Adventure in History. An Adventure in History is created and produced by the Clatsop County Historical Society and brought to you by KMUN.